Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need to get ready for Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back because they know small businesses can make a big difference. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer.
Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate and teach. So call me, 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me, at Jim Cramer. Look, when the CEO of J.P. Morgan, the world's largest bank, says there is scary stuff ahead, well, guess what? You take notice. When Jamie Dimon reels them off, Russia, Ukraine, oil, gas, war, migration, trade China, not to mention the possibility of 6% interest rates, that's what he's talking about, because of persistent inflation, you get scared. And the market plunges right on time. Although, fortunately for the bulls, the fear eventually subsided. Dow ultimately finishing up 109 points. S&P advancing 0.53%. NASDAQ jumping 0.72%. Now, earlier this week, I told you the market would find its footing once stocks came down enough and long-term interest rates started falling. And that's what really happened today. And it's why the averages ultimately turned. That said, I still think it makes sense to do some selling in certain select areas, especially the techs and the fintechs and SPACs with crazy town valuations and no real earnings. But beyond raising some cash, after a bad couple of weeks, stocks do become, let's say, they get cheaper, right? They start pricing some of the negatives. When Dimon talks about the war in Ukraine and high inflation, it's not like these are new worries. We went over a lot of this with him, and as you'll see later tonight, I came away short-term bearish on events in Washington, but totally bullish on the events at 52nd and Market in Philadelphia. The Underbank Street we visited with Jamie, where he put up a new Chase branch. No, not. It's really a community center. It's much bigger than a branch. Now, many times during our interview or earlier, it was on the halftime report and later in the show, I found myself thinking, who cares about where the Fed funds rate is? If Chase can help pull up an underprivileged neighborhood, maybe we're in a much better place than Wall Street's willing to believe. But you know there's a problem with that thinking. The resurgence of a gritty West Philly neighborhood, as excited as it is to this hometown guy, doesn't propel the S&P 500 higher. Because the market, well, it just doesn't care. In a gloomy coda to an otherwise stellar event, you have to wonder how aggressive any banker can be if they believe the Fed will take rates sky high in order to kill inflation. Then again, Dimon's my age. We cut our teeth on 19% interest rates in the early 80s, and we did pretty darn well for our customers. Maybe the Fed funds rate's going to 6%, and it won't be the end of the world. At the same time, there are always cycles that are somewhat immune to the day-to-day macroeconomic news. Anything with exposure to these cycles may be worth buying. Dimon mentioned the agricultural cycle, for instance. That's on fire. You know I like deer. He talked about our amazing oil and gas profile, which is why I like Halliburton for the Charitable Trust, tempted to buy more of the oil service giant. Because even if crude goes nowhere, the oil service guys stand to make a killing. Because producers need to spend fortunes on drilling just to keep production stable. And he talked about tech. especially tech that powers, yes, machine learning, like the artificial intelligence that helps JP Morgan engage with its customers, detect fraud, along with many other mundane tasks, even related to trading. In other words, without mentioning its name, he's actually talking about NVIDIA, which shot up 14% today thanks to some great numbers last night. Management sees more orders from the data center. That's a big change. They see the semiconductor glut in gaming ending. That's a big change. And they're confident that artificial intelligence has gone mainstream thanks to the popularity of ChatGPT. And that's all fantastic for NVIDIA. Remember, NVIDIA spent years developing this exact technology, accelerated computing. And now they have a gigantic lead on the competition in what could be a $600 billion brand new market that didn't even exist pretty much a year ago. CEO Jensen Huang, been on the show a bunch of times, compared the breakout of accelerated computing. You got to pay attention to what he's saying. That's why I told everyone to watch the conference call. The breakout he compared to internet going mainstream, rise of the smartphone, rise of the personal computer. And NVIDIA now has the kind of dominance with AI that Intel used to have with the PC. They practically are the only game in town. They are AI. No wonder management can't measure the potential demand, because it's practically endless. A ton of tech stocks ended up running on NVIDIA's positive quarter, but that is plain laughable. It was like when we saw with Palo Alto Networks over this week. The whole point is that NVIDIA is running circles around the competition. No one is near them. What's good for them might not be good for anybody else. So where does it leave us? Bottom line, we've got a schizophrenic market where each local surge of hope gets squashed by the next national or international fear, which gives way to another round of hope, and sometimes all in one day. Manuel in Illinois, Manuel.
Yes, Jim, I have a question on STZ. I listen to the conference call and do my own homework like you tell me. The only good thing, positive thing I heard from that conference call was they were trying to divest their Canadian portion of the weed business. I just want your thoughts.
Well, look, Constellation Brands, as I tell many people, because we've owned it for a long time for the Charitable Trust, and we'll be going over, by the way, it's Saturday's big shindig just for investing club members. This is a cash flow story. Beer generates a huge amount of cash. For that, they can do anything. They can buy back stock. They can increase the dividend. I'm in it for the long haul. That's the only way to view beer. And don't forget, beer does quite well in a recession. Jack in Ohio. Jack, speak to me.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jimmy.
Of course, Jack. Hey, what's shaking?
A Energy's on a pullback out of EMB and PXD. I was going to stay with Devon, DVN.
I was disappointed with Devon. They did not do the number. It caused me to shudder, frankly, because Rick Moncrief needs to come on and tell us what went wrong. There's got to be something, because the other oil companies did not see that coming. And I want to know more about it, because, boy, did it ever wreck my day when it happened. More than my day, actually, like 3 days. All right, look, actually, now, this market is schizophrenic, and each local surge of hope gets squashed by the next national fear, which gives way to another round of hope. Sometimes all in the same day, like today, at Mad Money Tonight, Wall Street burned Papa John after earnings. So are investors getting a buying opportunity in a pizza chain that simply has had a great hot streak? I'm checking with the CEO. Then worried about a slowdown? Well, then I'm seeing if PG&E, yes, the giant Northern California utility, could be a strong defensive addition to your portfolio. Sit down with the top brass. And earlier, I had a chance to talk to JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon as the company opened a terrific community branch in my own town of Philadelphia. You do not want to miss it. That's kind of news, Jamie.
It'll surprise people, yeah.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed.
Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Bad day for pizza this morning. Domino's and Papa John's reported both fell short of expectations, sending their stocks into a tailspin. Although Papa John's held up better, it was still down 6%. What's going on here? I mean, these guys actually delivered a genuine top and bottom line beat for the quarter, just that Wall Street was terrified by the disappointing North American same-store sales numbers. Forget that international same-store sales were strong, though I want to know about more about the UK. At the same time, management's full-year forecast was, I'd call it a bit guarded. Now I'm wondering whether this isn't a buying opportunity or time maybe to abandon my long-favored love of the pizza place. So let's take a closer look with Rob Lynch, the president and CEO of Papa John's International. Learn more about the quarter and where his company is headed. Mr. Lynch, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hi, Jim. Great to be here. And I would argue there's no bad pizza, just so you know.
All right. That's fair. But here's what I really want to know, Rob. You had the misfortune of reporting the same day as Domino's, which was admittedly disappointing. When I go over and over the numbers, I'm going to use a term that you're going to have to explain to the public. You achieved a 30.1-year, three-year stack comp that outperformed peers. Now, Wall Street knows what that means. Can you explain to people what a stack means and why, therefore, your number was pretty good because of the stack?
Sure. So the last 2 years, 20 and 21, were the two highest sales years in our company's history, two record years where we continued to outperform both the competition and even our internal expectations. So there was a lot of discussion back then on whether or not we were a pandemic company, that all of our growth was coming just because of the shelter-in-place rules and the concerns around the pandemic and people not going out. Well, last year, despite coming out of the pandemic, we were able to continue to lap positive. We're continued able to grow. And so that 30% is a compilation of, you know, 2020, 2021, and 2022. Growing 30% means we grew on average 10% a year, which I think we're really happy with.
Right. That's what I think people need to know, which is why I think the stock's decline was overdone. Now, there was some concern that maybe your forecast was a little bit tepid. Sometimes you're a little more aggressive. We're worried about same-store sales in the U.S. Can you reassure us that actually the headline numbers, which were so critical of you, may have been misplaced?
So, you know, we guided today a long-range guide for 2 to 4% comp sales in North America on an ongoing basis. We believe that we can deliver in 2023 between 2 to 3% on top of this continued growth. That would be four straight years of comp sales growth, the only player in the pizza industry to be able to do that. And we believe we can do that because we've got the right plan to get us through what continues to be a challenging macroeconomic environment, geopolitical environment. We've got great innovation coming this year that's going to contribute to those sales. We're improving our operations, increasing customer satisfaction. So our teams are doing all the right things for the long term, and that's why we feel really bullish about our ability to outperform again in 2023.
All right, let's talk about the improving customer satisfaction. At one point in your conference call, you talk about how you got the time from the store from 30 minutes down to 20 minutes. Now, is that because you're using aggregators and you're not having to wait and find more labor, which we know is very hard yourself?
That's definitely a part of it. I mean, we're always seeking to find the best solutions to meet our customers' needs. 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, when I got here to Papa John's, we made the strategic decision to invest in partnerships with third-party delivery providers. And over the course of the pandemic, that's really helped us out. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the labor shortages, the staffing shortages, and, you know, we've been able to lean into those partnerships to be able to supplement our labor pool, especially during our peak periods on Friday and Saturday night. So optimizing that is one facet of why we've been able to improve our operating efficiencies. But I also tell you, we brought in new leadership. We've got people really focused on the core things that drive our business, and we're measuring those things on a daily basis, working with our general managers to make sure they're incorporating those procedures. You know, you think about the pandemic, Jim, we were trying to keep everybody safe. We're doing our best to keep those stores open. And in doing that, you know, you start to lose maybe some of your operating discipline. We're returning all that back to the restaurants, and we're starting to see some real improvement in customer satisfaction as a result.
All right, so a lot of people tell me, worry, Jim, you got to worry more about the commodity costs. I come back and I say the innovation's trumping the commodity costs, and I don't need to worry. What do you think about that analysis?
I don't know that they're mutually exclusive. I mean, I worry about commodity costs. I did, especially in 2022. That was the toughest year of my career. You know, we saw over 40% inflation in our commodities during the course of 2022. You know, it's tough to price for 40% cost increases. So we've been working hard to make sure that we're, you know, doing everything we can to be as productive and efficient as possible. But heading into 2023, we do see some easing there. We're already starting to see some easing there on some of the big costs that go into our food, like cheese and wheat. But we're also really focused on the innovation, right? I mean, right. The innovation is about bringing in new customers and introducing them to Papa John's and experiencing our premium products. So it is a balance. We're trying to make sure that our restaurants still make money and make sure that our franchisees are supported. But we got to make sure that we're also bringing in new customers with all that premium innovation.
All right. So, Rob, what are you doing with the idea that you can get machines now that sound just like humans? As we know, this is the ChatGPT, also NVIDIA phenomena. Have you looked at it, or is this not needed?
Yeah, I mean, we've always been a big technology company. I mean, we consider ourselves an e-commerce company. 85% of our orders do come across digital channels. We were the first brand back in 2001 to launch online ordering. And so, you know, we are always exploring ways that we can be more efficient, make sure, and investments that we can make to leverage technology to be more efficient. Right now, the GPT and some of the other AI that's taking orders doesn't necessarily meet our standards. But we'll continue to explore ways that we can invest to do that.
Well, look, I just think that if you had reported, say, next Monday, I think people would say, oh, pretty good numbers. I'm not kidding, Rob. You know, I know stocks, you know pizza. This was a good number. Thank you to Rob Lynch, president and CEO of Papa John's. Always good to see you, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, utilities have to deal with headwinds, quite literally. What's it mean for a stock that's fighting to keep the heat on for thousands? Stick with Cramer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Go to cnbcmakeit.com/courses to register now and learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course, where experts share their secrets for a dynamic resume, coming across with confidence, what to wear, and more. For a limited time, save 50% with our introductory offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.
If you're worried about a Fed-mandated recession, maybe you should have focused on today's earnings report from PG&E. That's that Northern California utility we like so much, we recommend it as the turnaround play. The utilities are textbook slowdown stocks. While the actual results for the quarter came up a tad short, management reiterated their full-year forecast, which is what we care about. But I think this is a case where you need to zoom out. Look at the big picture. PG&E hit its target of 10% earnings growth last year, and today they confirmed that they're on track to do 10% again next year. Hey, I like this. talk about consistency. Now, if they're able to pull off that kind of growth, it would make it maybe the most attractive utility out there. So let's check in with Patty Poppe. She's the turnaround artist of CEO of PG&E to get a better sense of the story. Ms. Poppe, welcome back to Mad Money.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kramer. Great to be with you.
Oh, thank you, Patty. All right. So how do you grade yourself on mitigating physical risk and mitigating financial risk last year and what you can do this year?
Well, I think we're making massive progress on both of those things. Obviously, physical risk is a key enabler to our long-term success. We reduced our number of acres burned by 99%. We've layered in all sorts of wildfire safety mitigation, so that is definitely on track and ahead of plan. And then financial risk, as you said it, consistency in a utility is the name of the game, and that's the game we're winning. We delivered exactly what we said we would deliver, and we've obviously, as you mentioned, reaffirmed our guidance for 2023 up 10% at the midpoint of our range, $1.19 to $1.23.
Why can't other CEOs have a no more, no less philosophy?
It's a winning one for utilities, I have to tell you. I don't know why more people don't employ it. Number one, it allows us when we are having a successful year, we redeploy dollars back into the benefit of customers, so we deliver what we said we were going to deliver. But we also, when we have trouble, we have the muscle that we use to get back on plan. And we showed on our call today 2-year track record, and we can't wait till that's many, many more years of track record to talk about.
So I know that the worst storms actually occurred at the end of the year through the first 2 weeks of January. Does not knock you off your plan at all for 2023?
It sure doesn't. You know, our team is at our best when we are put to the test. And we certainly were put to the test in back-to-back-to-back-to-back atmospheric rivers. That's like multiple hurricanes, one on top of the other. And we had 2.8 million customers impacted by it, all of them restored within 24 hours. It was extraordinary performance by the team and all of our partners across the state and across the nation. We really delivered, and it does not affect our year-end plan for 2023.
Well, obviously, someone like Shum Washington, maybe Secretary Granholm, because you did get $1.1 billion for Diablo Canyon. Was that a win for, was that something that you banked on?
Well, we knew that there's a lot of support for Diablo Canyon, and it's one of the highest performing nuclear power plants in the nation. And the state and the federal government agreed with us, and they're really supporting the extension of that plant with that funding from the DOE.
Now, I wanted to ask you, yesterday, Gavin Newsom, the governor, very pro-business guy, and Elon Musk got together, and Elon wants to come back and do some things in California. He could not have done that without first checking with PG&E or being sure that the lines are hardened. Any interaction with Elon?
We have a lot of interaction with Elon and the whole Tesla team. In fact, they did a 182-megawatt battery storage facility with us, which is to the benefit of the people of California. And in fact, I let Elon know last night we were happy to have him back home.
Oh, you talk to Elon? I mean, like, one-on-one?
Well, we do a lot of business together, and so I'm always wanting to support our customers, and he's a big one of ours.
See, I'm tempted to ask you what he's like, but I have to get back to the idea of maybe buying your stock, which brings me to the notion of what, you know, I'm most worried about, even though I shouldn't be, which is the victim's trust. Now you're down to about, what, about 100 and, well, I was looking at the last one. You still got about 150 more million shares. So I got an idea for you. Why can't you put together, I'm not kidding, why can't you put together a buying group, get this done?
Well, it's up to the Fire Victims Trust and their board. They determine when and how they sell. They've sold about 60% of their holdings. And look, we are aligned with the Fire Victims Trust. When we succeed, that enables them to deliver for their trust and beneficiaries faster. And so our goal is to make the system safer, faster. When we win, the trust is able to do their job faster.
Well, I agree that, but they have 187 million shares to go. I don't know whether they want to hold any. It doesn't seem like the trust charter allows them to. But if they do 50 million, 50 million, 50 million, and then clean up with another 37 million, it still may, your stock may still be at 15 because you're not going to put a dividend in place yet.
Well, in fact, we talked about that on our call today. We're talking about timing of reinstating our dividend.
Right.
The most important thing that we're focused on is delivering to make our system safer, faster. So that's our capital growth. We talked about our 9.5% rate-based growth CAGR over the coming years. We intend to invest that capital in the kind of infrastructure that our customers deserve and really are supportive of. And that enables us then to have the kind of growth that's industry leading. And we want that industry leading growth to make the system safer for customers. And then the Fire Victims Trust can do what they're going to do. And I agree with you. I think it's, you know, it's in their interest to make sure that they get the disbursements done. And when we're performing like we are, that enables them to do it.
Well, I couldn't agree more, particularly because the thing I was most worried about was undergrounding, wildfire mitigation. If those are solved, then it seems to me that it's pretty clear sailing from here.
There's two things to remember about our fire mitigation. One, undergrounding is definitely the long-term plan, and we have we'll be filing a plan this year. It's an important catalyst, I would suggest, for investors. We're going to be filing our 10-year undergrounding plan that has unit costs and is enabled by legislation that was passed last year. But the second thing, we implemented some new technologies last year that were very effective, our enhanced power line safety settings. That is what enabled us to reduce our acres burned by 99% today. We don't have to wait for undergrounding to be finished, though that's the best economic forward plan. Okay. Today, the system is safer.
Boy, I got to tell you, I still like this stock. The overhang will be solved by the time I speak to you next. And what a great quarter and how great it is to have a no more, no less attitude. Patti Poppe, CEO of PG&E Corporation. Great to see you again.
Great to see you, Jim.
All right, Mad Money's back there for the break.
Coming up, Cramer sits down with Jamie Dimon for an interview you won't want to miss.
You forgot the Fed.
It makes no difference to me. We're going to open branches, hire bankers, build technology nonstop.
Next.
Earlier today, we got a chance to speak with Jamie Dimon, the chairman and CEO of JPMorgan Chase, at his new community center right in West Philadelphia, where they're doing great work serving an underbanked community. Now, we had a great discussion. I aired live at noon, which you can watch online if you missed it. But afterwards, we got a few more minutes with Jamie that you haven't seen, so I want you to take a look right now. Jamie, I saw a smile this morning, and it's a smile that reminds me who you are. Yeah. You're a banker trying to get business for J.P. Morgan,
yep,
but also change a neighborhood. Is that why you're here at 52nd?
Yeah.
Philadelphia?
We love Philadelphia. We now have 50 branches here on our way to 80. I was so happy you joined us in the community branch. We got to see in action. Our people are happy, how proud we are of them.
Individual bank.
And that
bank.
One story about Khalif, right, who got a mortgage from Tanika, who I gave a big hug, and she called him every single day. And that one mortgage, his whole family, he talked about his family, the problems, they had rented the place for 25 years. That's changing the world, that one thing. And, you know, things we didn't mention is we got rid of college degree required for a lot of jobs.
Right.
We use that community branch. You know, we hire local people, local vendors for food. It was a black construction company who reconstructed the branch. We bring in small businesses. We give them advice. We've had 60 events, they told me there already. 60 events teaching people how to save money, how to start a business, how to do a mortgage and stuff like that. So, it warms our heart. And I mentioned when I was there that you know, a lot of our people, I tell them, you didn't get your job because of your brain and your work ethic, which was part of it.
Right.
You got your job because you have a heart and you care about people, whether it's our employees or the person who walks in the front door of that branch.
In a discriminated neighborhood, you know that. That was at one point, as I mentioned, red line neighborhood. Yeah. They couldn't get any mortgages.
Yeah. Well, you know it better than us, and we're trying to do things to reverse all the heritage of redlining, including doing things like including rent, which is not included in FICO scores. So you can be paying rent for 20 years, it's not included, but using alternative data like that to make more you might not otherwise make.
Okay, so this morning, Wells Fargo lays off a lot of mortgage bankers. Is this the right time to expand a bank to give mortgages?
Yeah. So we have expansion plans, which we just do nonstop.
But the Fed, you forgot the Fed.
It makes no difference to me. We're going to open branches, hire bankers, build technology nonstop. That's what we do. The mortgage business is a very tough business. So if you say it's a business matter, that is true. So I'm very sympathetic to what Charlie's going through. Tough regulatory. It's very tough legal. It's the profit margins move all over the place. So a lot of people are making different decisions. You've probably seen that 80% of the mortgage business is out of banks now, and that's kind of unfortunate.
Now, I often struggle when I listen to you to think about, well, is the government an impediment? Is the Fed an impediment? Or are these actually trying to help things to make them better?
I think the Fed has to do what they think is the right thing to do. And, you know, look, it's pretty
obvious. But you talk to them. Yeah. I mean, they're not doing what you think.
They kind of are. I think we all know they were probably late, okay, and their models didn't really work. Inflation got out of control. Then they kind of quickly caught up. So they'll probably, you know, pause at one point at, you know, a little over 5%. Whether it's enough or not, we don't know. And I don't think it will be. I think that inflation will come down, but maybe by the end of the year, you got to do a little bit more. But remember, inflation could be far worse than a mild recession. And so, right. You know, they've got to figure out what's the right thing for the long run, not just what's the right thing for next year or something like that. So
right,
I wish them that we all want them to do as well as they can.
But I still do not hear you say there will not be a recession. I still hear you say that it could be a hard landing. I'm not getting away from that.
Yeah, well, you can't avoid. I mean, I look at the world as possibilities and probabilities. So there's still a chance for a soft landing. Or no landing. There's still a chance for hard landing. And there's still a chance for what I call other because of Russia, oil, gas, migration, China, trade. Those are serious things. And I also point out, we've never had QT before. And QT, the early parts may be easy. The harder, later parts may be a little harder. So I expect that will cause a lot of volatility in the markets at one point.
Your bank is probably, people don't know this, but your bank has the best Asian desk. You've had unbelievable relations with China. Yeah. Did it have to go as awry as it is?
No. But I think, look, I think COVID set everyone way back where people didn't talk and they didn't relate to each other. I think Russia showed the world that the world is not safe for Western, completely safe for Western democracy. And you need American leadership, you know, that can coalesce the Western world. But you have what's happening today is you have a lot of countries around the world who are trying to pick and choose between who they're going to ally with, who they want to trade with. We've got to put trade back on the table. You know, I travel around the world, and a lot of these countries are, hey, if you're not going to trade with us, and China's coming to walk in here, so we need diplomacy, economic strategy, trade, very thoughtfully done with allies, and then private negotiations with China. We can take. I think we're doing a lot of the right stuff around national security. I think that's a sine qua non.
Okay, so I listen to you, and I say, okay, experienced banker, experienced worldwide, 67, can't be J.P. Morgan forever. People who are running for president are in their 80s. Why not Jamie?
I've never been a politician. That's why.
Well, maybe that's what you need.
I would love to be anointed president, but you have to win. You have to run. And there's almost no
chance. That
would be a big problem.
That absolutely is a problem. Now, where are we as a country? How do we stand? Our natural resources are great, but our leadership is paralyzed because we have so many people in Washington who hate each other.
Yeah, I wouldn't be that dramatic about it.
Okay.
If you look at the history of America, we've been through tough times, Revolutionary War, Civil War, World War I, Depression, World War II, and a lot of things past that. And so huge resiliency, which Warren Buffett always talks about. The way Americans should think about it is we're the most prosperous nation on the planet. And I'm going to contrast this to China, just to put it in perspective.
Right,
75,000 per person GDP here versus 13 there. We have all the food, water, and energy we need.
Right.
Okay, we've got the gifts of the founding fathers, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of enterprise, freedom of capital. You can do what you want with yourself. You can start businesses. You can invest in things.
On 52nd Street.
You can do all that.
But they haven't given everybody.
We've had the most.
There's not been equal opportunity for people to get capital.
We've done a terrible job lifting up the bottom 20% of society.
The government or the banks? Are you taking leadership? Because the government has failed many people.
I think every institution should do something to help. Hire people, train people, open this community branch. But we also have to get with the government. We need good, effective, competent government. And a lot of government policies backfired. But we need the inner city schools to get these kids ready to work. We got rid of college degree required. We need the schools to work. We need zoning. If you want more affordable housing, very often it's zoning. You know, we need immigration.
But you're telling me that there's enough that you would give credit. And your bank has enough savings and people have enough savings that if we just were kind of Prometheus unbound when it comes to the economy, we'd be doing much better.
I think so. I think we hold ourselves back because we don't have really effective public policy around regulations, taxation, immigration.
But is the American consumer good despite this?
The American consumer is in fabulous shape today.
What's the uncertainty here? I mean, yes, Ukraine. You've given me probably 8 certainties to 2 uncertainties.
So here it is. They're spending 40% more than pre-COVID. They have $1.5 trillion or something like that left in their checking accounts, more than they had pre-COVID. Jobs are plentiful. Wages are still going up.
Millennials going to your bank? Are they going to fintech? Square?
No,
Square going to beat you?
No. We're getting our share of everybody.
I'm baiting you. You're supposed to take that bait. Yeah.
I said no. They're not going to beat us. But the problem is that money is being spent down, now. So it's going to, we think sometimes by the end of the year, it'll be zero excess balances.
Well, that means good for the credit card business.
And it's being eroded by inflation.
Right.
So you can look at that and say, well, at the end of that, you'll have a little bit of a dip, but maybe not. You know, if we go into recession, the consumer's in better shape because unlike 08 and 09, mortgages are well underwritten.
Right.
Even though people talk about credit card debt, it's just normalizing.
Well, then the Fed, with its method, MEDEX method of 5.5, 6, is not going to solve the inflation problem that you're just talking about.
My view is it might have to go a little bit higher.
Higher than 6?
Yeah, possibly.
Well, higher than 6, a lot of people can be thrown out.
When you and I grew up, okay, like when I graduated school, you know, it was 21, prime was 21.5%. Things changed. There's been a big sea change.
Buying treasuries at 14.
Yeah, I still wouldn't buy treasuries today.
Well, okay, so north of 6 would be news. That's kind of news, Jimmy.
It'll surprise people, yeah.
You don't want to kind of take that one. I mean, mortgages are doing terrible.
It's going to do that.
You did say it's going to do that.
I suspect it may have to go a little bit higher than the 5 we're talking about. It could hit 6.
The country's not ready for that.
Well, that's, things happen.
We had layoffs. Unemployment goes to 5% at that rate.
It could, yeah.
We go back to 5%.
But it could be, again, if you're in the government, what you really want is the best long-term outcome. Inflation is so insidious that can damage growth for 10 years. So they're trying to do the right thing.
So it's homes, it's food, it's wages. You have no control over food, but you talked about positive ag. Homes, it doesn't seem to matter. They don't build enough, so we're always going to, homes keep going up in price. It's a supply-demand issue.
Well, they're down 10% from the peak, so keep that in mind.
Yes.
And we need to supply more homes.
Yes, we do.
Affordable housing, all that, we need more. Yet you're absolutely correct. We're not building enough to keep up the population.
No.
That's a good sign for the future of the economy.
But the wages are only going to stabilize if enough businesses, including ones that use J.P. Morgan, fail.
Well, I don't think you need failure. But, you know, when you have a recession, companies fail. But hopefully that won't happen.
Can I leave on artificial intelligence something more positive? Your bank uses, I mean, everyone thinks that NVIDIA, one of our favorite companies, it's all new. You guys have used artificial intelligence throughout. You've understood, you've been able to catch fraud. You've been able to get rid of jobs that are very difficult, where people are actually talking to machines and they don't know it.
Yeah.
I mean, did you convene a meeting on this? Have you convened a meeting on accelerated computing?
All the time. Years ago, I wrote about it and we actually hired Manuel Velosa, who ran Carnegie Mellon here.
Sure.
Years ago. We have 100 people in research AI. We have thousands in data scientists, machine learning, data folks and stuff like that. We run, I think, about 300 AI programs.
You know, you weren't surprised by ChatGPT?
No, we were already doing stuff like that.
Should the Fed be using it?
Reading contracts.
Would they be better at their job if they were just plugging it in? Should rates be at 6?
I don't think ChatGPT can figure that out quite yet.
But it sounds like your AI could.
No, but we use it for things like risk, fraud, marketing, prospecting. We move $10 trillion around the world, and I always tell them zip-zapping as we speak. But it's running through AI systems to make sure, is it going to the right place? What are the patterns? What's the voice recognition?
Is 4% on the 10-year the right place to be? It's ridiculous. Isn't that ridiculously low?
I think it's a little low, yeah.
A little low.
Yeah.
Man, you catch it. It's very low.
It's low, yeah.
And capital markets kind of dried up. When are we going to see those numbers get better?
Soon.
Net interest income, how come nobody cares? They think there's going to be too many... Net interest income is going to be great, but people are now worried about bad loans. I'm not seeing or hearing from you that there's a lot of defaults.
I don't expect a lot. I think if you have a recession, my view is you have what I consider a normal credit cycle. Losses will go up in a way that's quite predictable in a recession.
But usually,
unlike what happened in 08 and 09.
But we can't necessarily break an economy with 8% if many people are buying their homes with cash, if they're not enough homes. I'm trying to figure out what's going to go. What goes under or what stops to head off inflation?
Well, I think the banking system's in fabulous shape.
Yes.
Consumers would be going through a recession.
Self-consumer is the best ever? Best that you've seen as a banker?
Yeah, pretty much.
Since 2005, is it the best?
Pretty much, yeah.
Why am I so worried then? You just made me really worried.
I'm not worried about the normal economic cycle. I would only worry about the abnormal stuff like the war in Ukraine, oil, gas.
All right, you want to get worried about existential, not 50-second in market. You're not worried about 50-second in market.
No.
I like that. No. That's a good place to leave. Jamie Dimon, Chairman and CEO of J.P. Morgan.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up, Cramer takes your calls, and the sky is the limit. It's a fast fire lightning round. Next.
It is time. Some of the lightning round.
Kramer, that's where we're going to say goodbye, bye-bye, you know, play us out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round, Kramer's money. Let's start with Ken in Pennsylvania. Ken.
Hey, booyah, Mr. Kramer. How you doing?
I am doing well. My dad's name was Ken, and I met someone who worked with Dad from J.P. Morgan today for 20 years. Was Dad's banker. How can I help?
That's awesome. Hey, I was inquiring about Core Civic. I've held it for many, many years. Used to pay a nice dividend. That went away a couple of years ago. I was wondering if I should hold on to that or sell it.
Well, you know what? You're exactly right. Look, I was worried. When the dividend went away, I said, go away. I'm standing by my position, and I thank you for the call. Sean in Arizona. Sean.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Jim, for taking my call. How you doing there?
Of course. I am doing well, thank you. How about you?
Great, great. Hey, listen, first things first, we love your full photo of mezcal out here in Scottsdale, Arizona. We were drinking that throughout the
football
weekend. Just fantastic. We love it.
I'll tell my wife. It's her business. Thank you.
You got it. I've got a stock I've been meaning to ask you about. You got Warren Buffett buying this one, and you've got Steven Spielberg praising Tom Cruise for saving cinema with Top Gun Maverick. What do you think about Paramount Global, Jim?
I wish it weren't up about 40% for the year, because I'm telling you, I agree with you. And if it comes down, don't read unscripted. You might change your mind. It comes down, then I say, okay, let's go to Robert in Texas. Robert.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for everything you do for us.
What
do you
think of
this Clear Secure ticker?
You know, my wife asked me that the other day, because we always like to get in front of the line that Clear Secure does that. If they pivot and actually make the money they say they're going to make for this year, then I say buy. But I don't like companies that are losing money, which is what most definitely they are doing. Okay, now we're going to go to Lucas in Minnesota. Lucas.
Hey, Jim Cramer, thanks for taking our call and helping our home gamers out. I was out moving
Thank
the
14 you.
Inches of snow that we got last night, wondering about spring break. So what do you feel about booking.com?
I like travel. I like their numbers this very evening. I've been recommending travel stocks and staying away from the Wayfairs. I'm sticking by my view. I think you've got a winner, Bookings. Let's go to Craig in Colorado, Craig.
Hey, JC, man, thank you for taking my call. You're my number one disciple, man. I am from Mile
number
High Madness. Hey, I have my sleeves rolled up for a company called Coupang.
Well, keep them rolled up and don't pull the trigger. I don't like the fact it's not making money. We don't recommend stocks not making money on Mad Money. And that, ladies and gentlemen, this is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, is market confidence in Jay Powell too mercurial to measure? Kramer tunes out the noise and checks out the charts. Next.
Jim Cramer, the diehard of the dollar.
Hey, Jimmy, love the show.
My five-year-old grandson loves to watch your show.
I have to thank you for making us money when it's there to be made.
Our world is a better place with you in it.
Weeks ago, Wall Street was incredibly confident the Federal Reserve could cool down inflation without doing too much damage to the economy. Since then, the conventional wisdom has turned on a dime. Now, everybody's convinced that business is too strong and inflation is too sticky. So the Fed will have to keep hitting us with a ruthless series of rate hikes that drags everything down. And that's what drove the meltdown over the past week. But what if we're reading too much into the data? Maybe the economy is improving while inflation is actually falling, and then it's a good thing. No need to overthink it. Okay, not my take, I admit, but it is the latest contrarian call from Larry Williams, the legendary technician and market historian who's been the top expert in the space since before I learned to drive. Larry's written over a dozen books and created a host of his own proprietary technical indicators, which you can find on his website, which is called iReallyTrade.com. More important, he's racked up an incredible track record on this show, and that includes calling the COVID bottom in the spring of 2020. He also told you that the end of February could be a little turbulent. Most people have missed both of these. After this week's carnage, Williams, guess what? He's feeling bullish about the stock market. Why? Bunch of reasons. First, this morning, the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago released their National Activity Index, which measures overall economic activity along with the accompanying inflationary pressures. No one talks about this index at all. According to the Chicago Fed, business picked up substantially last month, up 0.23 in January.
a huge increase from down 0.46 in December. Williams takes this as a strong indication the economy is actually picking up. Look at these Chicago numbers. Personal consumption and housing rose from 0.06 to minus 0.06 to plus 0.13. That's an amazing change. I didn't hear about either of these two numbers at all today. Shame. More importantly, check out the chart of the Chicago Fed Diffusion Index going back nearly two decades. This is another way of measuring the National Activity Index data, according to Larry. It is a very good leading indicator of recessions. It turned negative in 2007, nice call, before going extremely negative in 2008, even better. It turned incredibly negative again in early 2020 as COVID hit. But at the moment, Williams points out that it's still well above the level that's associated with severe slowdowns. Of course, maybe you look at it and say, yeah, that's the problem. The economy's too strong, which means more inflation and more need for ruinous rate hikes. Williams disagrees. Rather than extrapolating from every data point, he recommends looking at the New York Fed's underlying inflation gauge, which is pretty self-explanatory. Check out this chart of the full UIG in blue, the prices only UIG in red, and the consumer price index in gold. Very simply, inflation clearly peaked late last year. Come on, this is cut and dried. Even if it isn't falling as fast as we'd like it, it's still decelerating big time year over year. As Williams sees it, this is indeed a Goldilocks scenario. The economy's getting better while inflation's still cooling. What could you ask for more, really? At the same time, he's constantly looking at the averages, searching for cycles that tend to repeat themselves over and over again, his great strength. Right now, he likes what he sees. Take a look at the weekly chart of the S&P 500. His cycle forecast, well, it's in red, okay? Based on the cycle forecast, the sell-off in the S&P should be almost over, with a comeback rally about to begin. Williams is betting the next rally lets the S&P break out of the downtrend lines that all the bears are focusing on, at which point they'll capitulate, cover the short positions, and go back to their caves. I know it's very out of step with the prevailing view at the moment, but let's keep in mind, this is a market with insane mood swings. A couple weeks ago, stocks traded like everything was great. Now the action says we're looking at a severe Fed-orchestrated recession. I don't know if Larry's right to go as bullish here, although, boy, would I love that. But I do know this market tends to overcorrect. So after a couple of bad weeks, it wouldn't surprise me at all if things turn positive again, just when no one, and I mean no one, is looking for it. So buckle up and be prepared for some potential whiplash. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.